Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and every week I'll be interviewing a special guest talking about how to set up a business or how to launch a new product in the local market. Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Peter Greck from Brandwagon. Today, we'll be discussing how to reach your audience. Welcome, Peter.
Hey.
So, we know who our audience is by now. What's the most successful way to reach them?
Well, I think the answer to that is a very, very, you know, wide answer, and it definitely goes towards, you know, if you want to reach your audience, you've got to speak to them and speak directly to their heart.
Okay. So,
you've got to understand sort of what their passions are, and then understand how they're expressing those, and how to get into their heads in the right way.
Okay, so you're sort of manipulating.
Well, not really, actually. I think what I'm saying is that, you know, if you want to speak to a best friend, there's absolutely no point in trying to act like someone you're not. So you've got to reach and speak their language. So, you know, in your answer to your question is like, what's the most successful way to reach your audience? I think it all depends on who your audience is. So I think clearly what needs to be done is understand your audience, understand what they do, understand, you know, what they read, where they go online, you know, what are the sites that they're visiting, what time, you know, what sort of sites are they visiting for what reason. It's absolutely pointless on, you know, trying to reach your audiences on LinkedIn if you're trying to advertise something which has absolutely got nothing to do with LinkedIn. So
okay.
People go on LinkedIn to look for jobs or to look for prospects or to look for, you know, business partners. You're probably not going to get anywhere if you're trying to push a sports drink on LinkedIn. Having said that, if you're trying to push a sports drink, if you wanted to go on a triathlete website, on a running website, it's actually probably more ways to get to them like that. So I think the best way is really understand your customers, really know what they're doing, really know what they're doing with their lives, and then, you know, try and plug in, but give them reasons to talk about you.
So how do you approach them in general? Is that a, would you do a market research exercise? Would you get a focus group together? How do you approach these people to find out? Because they're not generally going to be in your circle. You want to sell to more people than your circle.
Yeah,
your
of course. I think, as I said, you know, I think it's a matter of really understanding who your customers are. So once you know who your customers are, as in what sort of market segment you're going for,
mm-hmm.
you really need to understand what they want, what they do. You know, good sort of market research, you know, just starting off some basic market research, you know, just going online and doing a bit of research on them, on the type of customers you're trying to deal with, is probably a good start. Having some focus groups, having some, you know, sit downs with these people and trying to, you know, get them and just speak to them to understand a bit more about them is definitely the next step. And then it's a bit of sort of, you know, trial and error. You got to go there, you got to try and, you know, access a market, you know, some sort of marketing channel that you think that they're going to go for,
mm-hmm.
and then test it. And that's the only way of doing it.
And so you would know if you put something in the traditional printed press, say a sports magazine,
mm-hmm.
you would measure the responses from there and see if...
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way of doing it. So obviously there's different types of, you know, marketing here. We're talking obviously clearly about communication, so that you can communicate to a customer just to push your brand, but then you can also communicate to a customer to actually make them buy something. So if you're reaching out for the sake of the example in a sports magazine and you're pushing a sports drink, then if you add sort of a coupon or a discount code to your ad and you know that they're using it, then you know that they've seen the, you know, this ad, they found out about your product in this magazine and they're actually using that code to purchase your product, so you actually
traceable. Know
that it's traceable.
Mm.
Obviously, with digital advertising, it's so much easier because you can actually track whether they're clicking on your ad. And once they've clicked on your ad, they've visited your site, so you've got a visit on your site plus the tracking code to measure up against. So you know 1 + 1 will equal, well, in this case, 1. But of course, you know, that's the difference between traditional advertising and digital advertising. So digital advertising is easily sort of the cheapest way to getting to your customer, but doesn't mean it's the easiest way. So just because you can go on Facebook and put in an ad, and any dummy can do that, doesn't mean it's going to work in the best way possible.
That's true. Lots of people can't actually use Facebook or don't use Facebook,
yeah,
in fact. So,
yeah, exactly.
Or
use
adverts.
It for different reasons. There you go.
So if you're advertising this a sports drink to an athlete and you know he accesses, or he, you know, he uses various sites. Is there anything else that you need to know? Is there, if he's at work accessing,
mm-hmm.
would that make a difference to if he's?
Yeah, I think timing and place is everything. At the end of the day, it's pointless me trying to push something when you're not in the ready to buy, in not in a position to buy. So you need to reach to your customers when they're actually ready to listen. Otherwise, you're just wasting your money. So you know, if you're targeting a you know, a site which is typically accessed, you know, by athletes, maybe, you know, more than just creating some advertising, but also making some, you know, writing an article out there so that people could actually read and understand what it is in your drink, which is different to other drinks, and, you know, what's the unique selling point of your drink. So it's about time, place, and what you're saying.
And you would do that over a period of time, so you may do the article a few weeks before the product is
being actually Yeah, of course. I mean, I think one tip to entrepreneurs is that you better choose the right solution, but hang on in there. It's not going to work straight away. You're going to spend some money for nothing till you realize which channels are actually working. And even when you find the right channel, it's going to take some time till things, you know, till people start changing their, you know, their habits. You know, shifting from one sports drink to the next. It's probably going to take a lot of time.
And how do you know that your message has got to your audience? What's the sort of success rate if you send 100 emails?
Mm-hmm. If you send 100 emails and you get 5 back, that's a super success.
Wow, okay.
10 would be amazing. You should write about it. So don't expect, you know, it's like it's 5 to 100. So
so this all helps with sizing your audience as well. And,
well, I think the best way, you know, to get to your audiences is to start small and capture, you know, small groups in a short amount of time, and then, you know, try and grow that as organically as possible. Advertising is an easy method to get in there, but that doesn't mean you're going to be there successful forever. Just because it worked yesterday doesn't mean it's going to work tomorrow as well. So you've got to be creative, you've got to keep changing your ways, and you've got to, you know, sort of... I mean, if somebody sees the same ad over and over and over again, they just get so used to it that they just block it out.
Right.
So you've got to be creative in the method, and you've got to be creative in the medium as well.
So there's, like, you discussed articles.
Mm-hmm.
What about bloggers?
Bloggers, you know, are probably the most effective way of influencing audiences. If you get the right blogger who's got the right audience, who's got a captive audience who actually listen to what this blogger says, so if they're endorsing the product, and because they're worth listening to, then there's probably, you're going to push that success rate up by probably 3 times as much.
Okay.
Because people believe people believe like-minded people who have done or, you know, doing things that they would love to do. So if you're pushing a sports drink, probably the easiest way to do it is get, you know, the right sports people to be drinking your product in the right events.
Does that cost a lot more than normal advertising, or...?
You'd be surprised about how cheap it could actually be.
Okay.
So without taking advantage of struggling athletes or, you know, pop stars or singers or musicians, I think by offering, you know, free products and sponsoring, you know, the right influencers with the right products, can go a long way in converting your audiences. So everybody's got their local champion, everybody's got, you know, their go-to person that they actually listen to. So trying to find these influencers in a big group of people
mm-hmm.
is going to be so much more effective than just blanket targeting people on Facebook.
And that's everything you could do, them photograph with them using your product, or
for
even
example,
them writing about it themselves.
But even them just drinking and talking about it is going to be strong enough.
That's quite an interesting way. Now I'm going to watch more bloggers.
I think the most important thing is to find bloggers you can trust.
Mm.
So if your blogger is probably going to ask you for money about the product and not ask about the product, then they're probably not a great blogger to talk to. So as long as you have faith in the product you're selling, and I'm assuming that all the people listening to this program are all the fantastic people and super entrepreneurs, you know, have a product that's actually worth selling, and they can influence their bloggers and talk to them in a way that the bloggers understand what they're actually pushing, and pushing it to the right people in the right way, then it's probably going to go very far. So there are websites that people trust, and there are websites that people just run away from.
And there are other things, I'm guessing, you can track the journey from the blog back to your website for buying the product.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's exactly how affiliate networks work.
Okay.
So just to put you in the picture, a blogger would be part of an affiliate network, if you wish. Some paid for, some not. Some people are actually... So some of your bloggers can actually make money just by passing, you know, backlinks into your website. So anybody that clicks on an ad on a blogger's site and then gets straight to your site to convert that product into a purchase, that link into a purchase,
uh-huh.
would be forming part of your affiliate network. You could offer bloggers, you know, a percentage on all sales, or, I mean, that's pretty much how the iGaming industry works.
Okay.
Having said that, setting that up might be slightly expensive for, you know, startup businesses. So there are simpler ways of doing it as well.
And does this work? Because obviously once you're on the internet, you're looking globally. your audience. You could find somebody in Uzbekistan seeing your advert and
then ship it there. Why not?
That's it. Now suddenly you have to be able to ship your product. Is there a different way of talking to somebody in a different country?
Well, I think the key thing is to speak to people in their own language. Now, obviously, language is a key and very, very important play over here, but also it's not just a matter of understanding how the language works and actually speaking the language, but also understanding the culture and understanding sort of the subcultures of the way people talk and speak. So why sarcasm and black humour might actually work in the UK, it might go completely flat in Uzbekistan.
Right. So from your market research again, you would find out how to talk to different nationalities?
Yeah. What's the language that they're talking with? What's the slang that they're using? What are the keywords that they're using? What are, you know, the extra, you know, added sort of, you know, words that they use when they're talking about the product.
Uh-huh. And hot topics, I guess, there'll be things that they're watching.
Yeah.
You're not going to pitch around football.
Yeah, I mean, cultures, you know, appealing, selling a product in different cultures is such a delicate process. And I think understanding the culture and trying to get somebody, a man on the ground or a woman on the ground in this case, you know, is so important. It's trying to get people who really understand, you know, the audience you're talking to, making sure that nothing you say could be offensive or not, you know, and making sure that whatever you're pushing in whatever shape or format actually appeals to the people you're talking to and doesn't offend.
That applies also to imagery.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, in this extremely visual world that we're working in, and not only visual in terms of static imagery, but also in video. I think it's so important. We're so careful and so sensitive to the cultures that we're trying to, you know, to speak to. Besides, you know, religion and language and even, you know, political backgrounds and sensitivity in terms of habits and trends in the local industry. It goes such a long way. I mean, just coming back to the sports drinks, there are cultures where, you know, everybody believes that you can pop a Red Bull and go for a marathon, and there are others who believe in, you know, going organic and going sugar-free and going, you know...
It's knowing all of that as well and making
sure... Yeah, it's so important that you... At the end of the day, I mean, each one of these, of our entrepreneurs listening out there have 24 hours in a day. They have a finite budget to whatever it is. No matter how big it is, the budget is finite. And they better spend it in the right place at the right time.
So targeting is absolutely key. So
if you know that you're going to be successful in one market and less potentially successful in the other, no matter how big the other market is, you know, go for the one where you can get the biggest wins first. Because that's going to teach you a lot about that present market, but also it's going to give you enough capital to then venture out into the more risky or sensitive markets.
So, and how do you know then, once you've, if you've reached a market, how do you know when you've got to sort of saturation point? When do you know then now is the time to launch product B, mm-hmm. or then to move into the next market? What happens at sort of saturation point?
So, I mean, in every market there's that sort of product life cycle. There's a stage where it takes a while till, you know, the innovators come in and sort of start buying the product, and then, you know, it reaches a critical point. I think the tipping point is sort of knowing how big your market is and how, you know, who are the competitors out there, who's the leading brand on the market, unless it's something which is completely new. You know, trying to understand how quickly you can penetrate that. Just because you've reached that critical point does not mean you're actually there. It just means that all your market has tried it now. But how long can you sustain that for? How long before, you know, the next best competitor is going to come in and, you know, give in a 50% discount on their own product and sort of cut you out of the market? How long can you last for that? Are you just in there because of price? Have you just managed to, you know, bulk up the shelves with your product because you're selling it for cheap? I think for me, starting my own business, I think it was a matter of, if I get to the third reorder, then probably on a good thing.
Okay.
You know, so I believe in sort of in, you know, three is a magic number, if you wish. And I think, you know, if you've sold your product or your service or you've had the, you know, an interaction with a customer three times, then you're probably there. But you're also at the critical point where your customer might say, all right, now I've had this product three times, do I shift? So irrespective of whether you think you've made it, doesn't mean you've actually made it. And I think before you sort of shift your focus onto something else, make sure that somebody else is focusing on what you could have been focusing on before.
So is there a merit then in doing more market research at this point, now talking to those customers that you've spoken to and finding out what they want next or what they want to change?
Well, I think the truth is never stop talking to your customers.
Okay.
I think, you know, you exist, your business exists only because of your customers. You can have as many staff, you can have a huge board of directors, you can have advisors, you can have, you know, bank managers running after you. If you don't have a customer, you don't have a business, and it's as simple as that. your customers will change in the same way you've changed. And just because you've had a customer for 5 years doesn't mean he's going to be there forever. He's going to change. So you need to reach out to the next best customer as well.
Is that, is that a constant dialogue? You do that through social media or directly?
Yeah, any channel possible, but even face-to-face where possible. I think face-to-face is so important. But even listening out there, just because you've made it to the top, you're a big CEO of, you know, a huge company, you need to be listening into the complaints. You should be checking, you know, your Facebook. You should be checking, are you being served, or any of these sub-local...
I wish more companies would.
Well, you know, it's so important. And if you're lucky enough to actually have made it on Are You Being Served, or a typical blog, you know, where people are complaining about the service, so you actually gain notice, that's great. But there might be a number of others which have gone unnoticed. You know, people might have complained to one of your customer care agents, but it never got to you. I think as a business owner, it's so important that you're out there listening to what your customers say, because they're the ones keeping you in business.
And so they'll be giving you pointers on something's not working, or maybe your opening hours.
Yeah, I mean, even just listening to sort of, you know, the feeling that they've got, you know, get a bit of a touch to the market. You know, what's the pulse of the market? You know, how's it feel? Are people still happy buying my product? Do they get a feeling that I'm getting complacent in the market? You know, is there some other cool brand? Have I just become the next old brand now? You know, just because you're an innovator once doesn't mean you're going to be like that forever. And people are going to catch on to the good stuff that you were, you know, producing before.
So going back to the complaints, how should a company handle those at the first level if somebody does then post something on a Facebook mm-hmm. or a, you know, something?
Well, I think sort of my best advice to anybody out there with a brand should be ready for it, because it's going to come. You know, one day something's going to go wrong, irrespective of how many standards and processes and procedures that, you know, anybody in your business is following. Something is going to go wrong, and it might not be your fault. It might be the fault of somebody who was, you know, putting your product on the shelf. Coming back to that sports drink, might have been left in the sun for a whole weekend before it got sold to a customer, and all the good stuff has gone by now. You know, something's going to go wrong. Be ready for it. And I think the most important thing is to be honest with your customers and say, listen, this is exactly what happened. Acknowledge the problem. Even though it might not be an issue, might be some, you know, might be a customer who's trying to be cheeky out there, and it's fine, but just listen to them. I think that will go a long way. Acknowledge if there is a problem, do your best to fix it. I think, you know, having the right methodology out there, and also, you know, the readiness to know what to do when something happens, I think is so important.
And again, you would answer them as vocally as they've complained, so that they know that you're taking the matter in hand, so that other people can see you're a company that cares. Not answering right down in the detail, just...
Well, I think one of the most important things is to be as fast as possible. So I think as soon as you hear about it, and make sure that you have, you know, all the options and ways and practices to actually, you know, be out there to listen to these things, to notice stuff as it happens, you know, answer immediately, acknowledge that there's, you know, that has been issue, acknowledge somebody actually posted about it, and just say, you know, thank you very much for mentioning this, and we're going to look into it and get back to you. Okay. Make sure you get back to them and see how you can fix it. I think that's so important.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Peter Greck from Brandwagon. We're discussing how to reach your audience. So, Peter, we were just talking about complaints online, and now you've reached your customer, how actually they're trying to reach you back. Can you give us some examples of complaints that have happened online recently?
Yeah. And I think in this frame, I would say, like, one thing which I believe, you know, entrepreneurs should be really thinking about is you've got to be loyal to a number of things in the business, but two of those people you should be loyal to is A, your customers, but B, your brand. So your customers are following your brand. So if you have a good brand, if you have a brand that's honest, and honest in irrespective of what line you're in, okay, you might be, you know, selling really exciting stuff which not everyone might believe in, but, you know, if you have a brand which people believe in, people are following that brand, and it makes sense, make sure you're true to the brand. Don't dilute your brand. So recently I was reading an article about somebody who was complaining on Yelp about a restaurant that she frequented. So basically, just to put our readers and our listeners into the framework, there's somebody who went up on Yelp and complained about going into this restaurant, and the music was too loud, and the people were too noisy, and the menu was too small in terms of choice. She didn't find what she was looking for, and she went up on Yelp saying how loud this place was, and how, you know, nobody really cared about, you know, the customers, and nobody really cared about offering any choice in the menu. And so she gave them a 1-star rating, and, you know, a huge complaint. I think within a couple of hours, the owner of this establishment went back on Yelp and sort of rated this review as a 1 and explained why. And whilst he thanked her for her customer for coming into his restaurant, he clearly explained that as is, you know, present even on the Yelp rating, is that, hey, we're a motorcycling bar. We believe in loud music. We believe in offering a very, very small choice of really good burgers and, you know, some very, very basic stuff. We sell beer really cheap. We don't do it in the best of ways, but we do it in the ways that our customers care about. They're not here because they're rushing off to a meeting. They're just going to stay here all night. You know, they're talking about their bike rides. They're talking about this, that, and the other. And that's our brand, you know? Mm. The brand we believe in is offering a place for bikers to just come and, you know, and rest and just have a good beer and a good, you know, a plain good old burger. No fancy stuff. No delicate cuisine. You know, just this is who we are. So, clearly it doesn't reflect too well on you by the fact that you chose us as a place where you wanted to come for your fancy food and your quiet tea.
So, yes, not everyone is your customer.
Not everyone is your customer. Make sure that you do not dilute your brand just because, you know, there are other customers out there. You cannot be everything to everyone. So I think one of your biggest loyalty needs to be to your core audience. You know, if you're loyal to them, if you're loyal to your brand and to the brand that they follow, they'll be loyal to you and they'll be really talking about you.
Referring their friends and their friends.
Absolutely, and that's the best way to reach your audience.
Absolutely.
Because they trust their friends.
Is there any sort of metrics behind that, knowing how many people will refer you on? You were saying earlier about email, you can send 100 emails and maybe 5 would come back. Yeah. If you use a blogger, you might have 3 times more than that.
Yeah.
Is there a metric against referrals?
I think in every business it's different. So in B2B services, I mean, I would say that probably 80% of work comes through referral. Tracking that referral is extremely important. So, you know, I would say that probably 80% of our own customers came through, you know, referral. So they might have seen or asked a friend of theirs in another business, you know, who did your branding, who did your marketing, and that sort of, that's how they might have heard about Brandwagon. So I think it's really, really important, you know, to understand what makes your customers tick and hopefully wondering whether they could push you to somebody else. But I remember as I was starting up the business, I used to ask, you know, all my happy customers, would you be able to recommend this to somebody? Is there somebody you think in your circle of, you know, in your network, who you think could take advantage of our services as well?
And that's something important as you've built your own business. Everybody in the business respects the brand, actually is part
of
the brand.
Absolutely.
That's something
absolutely.
You've
I think that's sort of really important. And I mean, we have the saying that, you know, do you bleed pink or not? And the truth is that, you know, it's really, really important to develop a culture and to try and extend, you know, that brand across to the people that, you know, that work with you. Essentially, you know, if you cannot sort of, you know, be the example of your own brand and your own team can't be an example for your own brand, you're clearly doing something very, very wrong. The worst thing that could happen is that, you know, this image that you're portraying out there is very, very different from the real image that actually exists.
And that goes the same with every
with
brand.
Every single brand. And, you know, the bigger up the food chain you go, the more important it is. You can hire out the most expensive agency and you can get the best Photoshop artists to work on your imagery. At the end of the day, if it stinks at the core, it's just going to really stink.
Or if the person who answers your customer complaint doesn't maintain your ethics.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So it's this, you know, 360 degree look and, you know, total quality control about what you're doing and also how you're speaking and how, you know, your people are speaking as well. And fundamentally, you're responsible for that. So if one of my team, you know, makes a mistake, it's entirely my fault. Totally. And you've got to bear the responsibility for
it. So enticing to start your own business.
Well, no one said it's going to be fun.
No, or easy, in fact.
No, easy? What's that? But the harder you work, the luckier you get.
The luckier you get.
The harder you work, the luckier you get.
I'll maintain that that mantra.
It's worked for me.
So let's go back to the sports drink. Are you only selling your sports drink then to people who are going to run marathons? That's going to be quite a limited audience.
Well, I think the interesting thing about sports drink, and if you look at, you know, brands like Red Bull and Go and Fun and all these other brands, I hope I'm not advertising them much here, but is the fact that what they might have started out to do would be very, very different to what they eventually became. And I think looking at sort of, you know, openings in your audience and sort of even the convergence of your audience at play is very, very interesting. I mean, if you just look at that sports drink, and if you look at athletes in general, just because you're an athlete and just because you're maybe a weekend warrior doesn't mean you're not a student, you know, throughout the day, during the week or you know, a father of three kids who's also trying to, you know, fit in his math and runs, you know, in between. So I think, you know, appealing that sports drink into different audiences, you know, could be something which you might want to do. It's not going to come to you as extremely obvious at the beginning, but I think knowing your audience and knowing as it grows and who's purchasing your product and for what reason they're purchasing your product might open up completely different avenues for you to create different cross audience products, if you wish.
You made an important point there that, you know, athletes are also fathers or students or,
yeah,
you know, housewives. So
yeah.
You don't just target the athlete magazine or the sites, you would actually go to other things.
Well, I think in fact, I mean, if you try and target, you know, sports people just as they read sports magazines, you're probably competing with all the other competing brands on the market. Whilst if you try and get them whilst they're, you know, on campus FM listening to a startup program, you know, this actually might be, you know, a great place to get them which they weren't expecting.
Maybe you might be more receptive to the idea because they're not being.
I think what's important is linking that you know, that sort of message to a good space. So I think experiences is where brands become, you know, products that people buy.
And you might find your product does something for people that you didn't really expect it to do. So
yeah, I mean, if you look at Red Bull as an example, Red Bull is actually a drink that taxi drivers used to drink so they wouldn't fall asleep at the wheel. How that became a sports drink. And how that became just an adrenaline junkie's go-to brand is amazing, you know. And I really believe that Red Bull, as a brand, could get into anything it wants to at this point in time without even having to sell the drink anymore.
Because it's just very cool.
I mean, people are consuming their product if you wish as their brand, you know, just on YouTube, just by sharing the videos. I mean, there's a brand in itself, you know. I'd rather go to the Red Bull channel on YouTube than, you know, watch Discovery Channel probably.
Okay, well, we'll leave that there. So you've been listening to me, Monique Chambers, here on Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM. My guest this week has been Peter Gregg of Brandwagon, and we've been discussing how to reach your audience. You can listen to a repeat of this program on the multiuniversitybroadcasting.com under webcasts, or look at our Facebook page, Campus FM 103.7. You've been listening to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers. The programme is aired every Wednesday on Campus FM at 9:30 a.m. and repeated on Thursdays at 1:30 p.m. Join us again next week to hear more about your journey in starting up a new business or launching a new product.